five agent other eight other outside agency engines all coming in, each led by an officer or a fire captain. These engines are coming in sometimes right after one another, minutes apart, and they all need to be placed and told what to do, where to go, what their assignment is. The battalion chief has the ability to step back, stand at their command vehicle, and place these engines strategically to effect a rescue, coordinate ventilation, have a rapid intervention crew to provide for firefighter safety. One engine will need to get a water supply. So there's all these different critical fire ground tasks that now a fire captain can safely direct his crew and get that mission done. So the battalion chief is able to stand back, look at the entire picture, and organize and direct and keep everybody safe that way.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions on my left? Council. Okay, thank you. I did have one question. You talked about the leadership role of the battalion chief and the battalion chiefs being under the management. You know, they're non-represented. They're not fire union, you know, represented. Are they supervisory in the sense that, in addition to you know, directing an on-site incident, do they assign work? Do they write evaluations? Do they, if necessary, discipline subordinate firefighters, or is that only done by the chief?
They do. They are supervisors. They are in that management role. So supervision, evaluations, the start of a disciplinary process, all that would be fall under their purview.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I'm going to open this up to any public comment on this item. Please approach the podium, if you will. And I will say that council has, you know, been aware of this idea, has endorsed this idea in strategic planning, and this is kind of coming to fruition with the details for council's approval. And that's probably why you're not hearing as many questions from council. We've had an opportunity to ask some of our questions previously. Go ahead, first speaker.
Jeff Oslin, resident here, business owner. And to our mayor's point, yes, this has been brought up at council before. Chief, I think you did a great job in presenting this organizational flowchart. I think it makes great sense. It doesn't cost the city a lot of money. It probably saves it in retention down the line again, so that's a big positive. I do have a couple questions. One is, by taking duties and saying Monday through Friday for the fire marshal, is he still a full fire personnel? And if so, he or she, they could technically cover a shortage, and then they would be gaining overtime. And my question, I guess, comes down to play, if that's true, should it be limited in their position to Monday through Friday, or should it just suggest that most of their operating hours are Monday through Friday? Thank you.
Okay, anybody else wishing to address the council on this item? Okay, seeing none, I did ask that question, you know, the role of the fire marshal, but could you address that, Chief, in terms of the role of the fire marshal of ever filling in, you know, on a fire incident? I mean, they are a 40-hour, you know, person, but they are a trained firefighter as well. So can you address that?
Absolutely. Thank you for the question. So the fire marshal, yes, is a fire captain rank. It's one of our personnel that has either been a fire captain with us or is a fire engineer that's completed the fire captain's testing process. So they're fully qualified, they're fully capable, expected during their 40 hours to respond to any incident and be an assistance during the incident. And yes, they very well could fill in a fire captain role in a suppression capacity. They would not be the first called, but in a big need, if we have, you know, a large fire happening, we need to put this person on a fire engine, is, you know, their first mission is the fire marshal, but they are a fire captain that can act in that role.
Okay, thank you. All right, with that, I will bring it back to the council for possible motion or any discussion.
I move that we adopt the fire department command staff restructure.
I will second that motion.
Yeah, I think Mark Regis. So we have a motion by Councilmember Peak, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Daris. And I was, this is an exciting day for the fire department.
Yeah.
And a major change in its structure and its advancement towards the future. So roll call, please.
Councilmember Peak?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Daris?
Yes.
Mayor Bobo?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
All right, thank you. We are going to move on to item I2, which is a discussion on updates to our native tree regulations. This issue came to us as a result of a discussion last council meeting regarding the removal of the heritage tree in front of the senior center. I'm going to turn this discussion over to Mr. Dunsmore, Community Development Director.
Thank you, Mayor, and good evening, Council. Yes, it was in one of our July hearings, this topic was broached, and it was based on removal of a heritage tree downtown. And so staff has brought some ideas to Council tonight that we're ready to discuss. Get this little slide to move here. I think this one. Ah, there it goes. Now it's moving. Just a little look back. It was all the way back in 1998 that we originally adopted these native tree regulations. We did more recently amend them in 2018 and tried to streamline the tree removal process and take the Planning Commission out of the loop and bring a lot more of these features down to a staff level. But it was July 14th of this year where the council asked staff to look at some additional amendments, primarily to make it easier for the Community Development Department to make determinations on dead trees and do we need an arborist report? That question was asked. So based on that direction, what we could do is take some amendments to the Planning Commission and the City Council and incorporate those, just wrap those into the bigger zoning update that we're doing. If we get direction to do that tonight. So I'm just going to show you some of the text, and I'm going to try and explain this to you. This really only applies to a couple of sections. And just backing up a little bit, the tree regulations are part of our municipal code. They're in Title IX, which is the zoning code, and they're in Chapter 11. It does also allude to these guidelines. The guidelines aren't in the code. The guidelines are actually a little piece that's adopted by resolution. And it's more a kind of a instructional manual of how to deal with trees. But staff has also taken it upon themselves, like we do with a lot of things, to make a handbook. And it's sort of a cheat sheet for what's in the guidelines and the actual code right here. But basically, the column on the left there is a current language, and these are just a couple of ideas if council wanted to amend as they have asked for of what we could do. Now, we haven't done outreach on this. We'd like to do outreach on this. If you want to proceed with this, we would like to bring in members of the community, ALPS, and other folks like that. But essentially, the current language that we have does require that for us to verify that a tree's dead or diseased or injured beyond reclamation, that it be done by an arborist. And so that is something that our team, the community development director, myself, or someone I designate, does have the ability to make that call. We do have that knowledge. We go out and we look at trees all the time. We know the tree varieties. We know tree health. We know native trees quite well. And we can tell you if something is deceased or not, even when it's dormant. So that's pretty simple. The key thing about that is knowing how a tree died. Did it die due to someone doing trenching or development? And that is why we have historically required an arborist. They look at it and say, oh, look, here's why it died. You know, there's sometimes a reason, but sometimes trees just naturally die. The other part, fees. The council did mention, can we alleviate fees from a situation where trees died? And this was a significant example where we had this heritage tree die downtown. And those fees were established by a resolution of the City Council. But we could put in here that no application fee shall be required for the removal of a native tree that died due to natural causes, again, as determined by the Community Development Director. So that's an optional clause. And then lastly, it was the mitigation. Do we need to pay mitigation for a dead tree, or could there be an exception when it's died of natural causes? And instead, could we just plant a 5-gallon tree? So that's the text you see there. So very simple, potential, suggested amendments. Again, we haven't done outreach on this. These are quite simple. We could wrap these into the larger zoning update. And I do understand the council, too, may want to do a more significant alteration of the tree regulations. And we can also discuss, you know, that later on. But at this point, if I can get this clicker to work, I don't really have any more slides anyway. Oh, there it is. There's the last slide. I'm ready to answer your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dunsmore. Before we proceed, I did want to clarify a couple of things for myself and perhaps council. the way you've characterized this, any changes actually would need to go to the Planning Commission and then come to council as an actual change in the ordinance.
That's correct, because it's Title IX, and Title IX requires Planning Commission review. Right.
So, you know, this discussion this evening is simply, I mean, we asked, would it be possible to do some of these things at our last meeting? So you're bringing this back, but this is not for a formal decision. It's really to give you further guidance. Do I want you to pursue these changes, et cetera? I would like to, and, you know, I kind of broached this at the last meeting. While I would like to see these changes made, I would like to see us have a more in-depth discussion about the entire tree ordinance. I find much of it very excessive, an excessive imposition on property owners. And so I would, for one, would like to have a much deeper discussion about the ordinance in its entirety and more aspects of it. In doing so, I think obviously we need to have community outreach and have a thorough vetting with the public. There are interested parties. We already got a couple of emails regarding this discussion this evening. So I think, you know, we don't want to, you know, do something and not have a full, you know, full discussion with the community, because there are very much interested parties. I also keep in mind that I don't want it to be an item like at strategic planning, as we discussed as a possibility at the last meeting, because I think it could be a very lengthy thing and take over too much of the strategic planning meeting session. So what I'm wondering, and keeping in mind, we're having an election. We will have at least one new council member. As much as I would like to have this discussion, I would think it might be wise to hold off and have said discussion in January, after we have a new council member seated, who could be part of that discussion, as well as allowing plenty of time for community discussion. But so in terms of, I mean, my take on it is, I mean, I for one would like to see these changes, but I would like to see more changes. So I'd like to see, does the council wish to, well, I want to open it up to the public as well, but let's just see if what questions council has. We'll open it to the public and then come back for a discussion on how to proceed. So I'll defer to my right, members from council member questions.
I have no questions.
Okay, thank you. Council member Funk.
Yeah, I've been in discussion and correspondence with a number of folks from Alps and other folks who are caring about trees. And so there's a bit of confusion. We took some folks by surprise with this one. So I do have a number of questions. Let me start, first of all, in the scope of what we're doing tonight, which is narrower than what the mayor was just describing. Do the proposed changes apply to heritage trees as well as to native trees generally?
This would apply to all native trees, which would include the heritage trees, yes.
Okay. And for the native tree ordinance, does that apply to properties that are zoned single-family residential in the absence of any construction that requires a permit?
No, they're exempt.
Okay. And do any of the changes we're considering tonight apply to situations of new construction?
Yes.
Okay, can you clarify that?
So any new construction that could impact or would impact or remove native trees would be subject to the tree ordinance, whether they're in a single family zoning district, multifamily district, commercial district, or any zoning district.
Okay, but the changes that we're making, which remove fees for and reporting requirements related to trees that died of natural causes, would those changes do anything differently as a result of that, what we're doing tonight?
Not for new construction. So that would only be in the case of a tree died absent of construction. It died by natural causes.
Right. Okay. And the construction things would be a something that we could just address in a broader discussion, as the mayor described sometime later. Okay. Proposed language does specify that instead of requiring the property owner to submit a arborist report certifying that the tree has dead, that the judgment of the community development director about a tree can suffice. You know, do we have expertise on staff that can judge whether trees are dead and are a hazard to the community? If that isn't your personal expertise, is that something that does the language of what we're doing or whatever is crafted in response to this, can that allow for this to be delegated or for you to rely on somebody else on staff who might know even more about trees than you do?
Yes. Yeah, it's quite straightforward, quite simple, except for the one clause that you mentioned, I believe you said, about safety. We're not going to enter the world of safety. I think that any tree, whether alive or dead or healthy or not healthy, could be determined to be a safety hazard. So we're not going to go into that arena, but we could go into the arena of identifying size, species, and whether it's dead or alive.
Okay. Are we looking at something that would require staff to make additional visits on site and put a big burden on staff with these changes?
This is only applying to dead trees in this particular scenario. So is that a significant burden when something's dead? Not really, but there is some additional staff time that would have to be utilized because we'd either have to go in the field or we'd have to have a really good photographic study of the situation and ensure that, you know, it's not construction or some other man-made item that impacted the tree. So really, we'd probably do a site visit. But most of these tree issues are not associated with dead trees. They're associated with development or tree removals that someone proactively applies for, not a dead tree. So dead tree situations are kind of the exception.
Yeah, the whole ordinance was really crafted towards creating incentives for people not to chop down trees in the pursuit of ever more money or other construction advantages. And trees dying of natural causes is something we now need to accommodate better, because time goes on. Is the language that you've proposed here, is that specific enough so that if you and your staff are not comfortable with what might be going on or why a tree might have died, something suspicious just doesn't feel right, that you could require a report to be supplied by the property owner?
Yes, we believe the way the language is, it gives us that discretion to make that call.
Okay, that's important. And Mr. Orvis of ALPS suggested some additional categories of experts just to sort of keep the cost down for folks when they're having to deal with this. Would you have any problem if the alternative to a staff judgment was written confirmation from a certified arborist, registered forester, field biologist, or agricultural extension agent?
Those are fine options.
Okay. And then one of the correspondents suggested leaving current fees in place, but giving staff the authority to waive them on a case-by-case basis. Is that a viable option legally for the city?
That becomes very problematic. We'd get accused of favoritism. We have a lot of friends in the community, so.
And I think staff should never be put in a position of discretion like that.
Agreed. Okay. Just wanted to check on that. And then just checking on the senior center were initially required to pay fees that were something quoted here in the $1,700 range when their heritage tree died. The staff report mentions a much smaller fee getting waived. I'm assuming that the heritage tree fee was for mitigation for a really big tree, which it was. But if you could explain if another really large tree dies of natural causes, would all of the related fees be waived under the language that we're proposing here, or does it need to be adopted?
They would be waived, and that was a very significant tree. It's by the inch, so that diameter was massive. The permit fee is just a couple $100 or $400, I think, but the actual mitigation was the chunk there. But it would all be waived under this proposed situation in a tree that died by natural causes where we could verify that situation.
Okay. One thing with the fees, for the record, Alps tells me that they'll be very that's the Atascadero Land Preservation Society, says they'll be very happy to take a check from the city, but that's not what happens right now. That the checks from the city go directly to vendors who do projects, from things, disbursements from the Native Tree Fund. Could you confirm if that's the case?
Yes, that's correct. That's exactly what happens.
Okay, thank you. And then if we're doing some kind of consideration in the implementation of this, will there be some outreach to folks who, given that council is guiding staff on, you know, some specific actions, but that are going to go through an approval process with Planning Commission and come back to council. Will there be some outreach during that process to Alps and other folks?
Yes, if we received direction tonight to do some of these very minor changes right now, we would definitely do outreach to the community, and especially some of the groups that have expressed interest in this topic.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Councilman, are you speaking to these very minor changes tonight?
Yeah, because they're going to come back.
I don't know that we'd have a big public workshop or outreach. I mean, I think people can see this is a very narrow change. Mm-hmm. I think this would go to the Planning Commission as part of the updated zoning code and back to you. So I don't think there'd be a robust public outreach unless you were a different director. I think we would for the broader discussion on the tree ordinance early in the next year, as the mayor had suggested.
Yeah,
I don't want to say we have all this public. I don't know that what we're discussing on the public outreach, because this would move along pretty quick. If you gave us this direction tonight, to be transparent, they go to the Planning Commission and back to you as part of the whole zoning code.
Sure. And the additions would be pretty focused that we're talking about here.
We know that Alps is well aware of this, so yeah, they would be well aware and certainly have the opportunity to come to a Planning Commission hearing on these minor changes.
Yes. Okay. And one last question to that. As these go through the Planning Commission, can we have a little discussion about 5-gallon versus 15-gallon mitigation trees? There's some concern that the smaller ones may not survive the deer and human interactions. There's other people weighing in saying the smaller ones work just fine. So I would just encourage you to have that discussion and let that be part of the consideration.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Any questions on my left? Okay, Councilmember Peak.
Yeah. If a tree is dead and it's standing up, it costs someone to remove it. If it's dead and it has fallen over, it doesn't cost anything. We can just cut it up. Correct?
I believe that sounds accurate. I have never been asked that question. But I guess if it's just on the ground, it's just wood at that point.
I guess my point is if a storm comes along and one of my dead trees falls over across the creek, I can go with my chainsaw and cut it up like I have in the past.
Yes.
But yeah, the same dead tree, it just got it fell over because the roots gave out. Finally, all the dead roots gave out.
And then it's no longer a tree. It's just wood.
Yeah. I think I agree with largely what Mayor Bebeau is saying. I think a lot of the costs that we put on the residents for removing something that's obviously dead, I'm in favor of getting rid of that fee. I also think that I trust you and your staff to determine if a tree is dead or not. I think it's not a small cost to have a certified arborist come to look at your dead tree. I think I talked to one resident and all said and done, it was $600 before they got permission to cut down a dead tree on their property. So I think just keeping that in mind, I love trees. I tell a lot of people one of the best things about Atascadero is all our trees. I'm concerned as well with like the older trees, like sycamore trees along Atascadero Avenue. They're all going to die at the same time. They're about 120 years old, right? We don't have a plan for that, and then we'll just have no trees along those areas. So there's I think the broader discussion is, what do we do in the future to mitigate having no trees from when the colony was founded all at once having to be replanted, or if we can do them sequentially. I think 15-gallon replacement, if the way it's the ordinance is written now, the homeowner or the property owner has to pay for the replacement, pay for a fee to go into the fund, pay for all these things, and then now pay for a larger tree. I'm not in favor of that. I think if you look back 30 years from now, 30 years behind us to now, there's many, 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 many more trees than there was 30 years ago in Atascadero because people like to plant trees. So I don't think that we have a tree disappearing problem. I think we have a great tree population. That being said, I don't want to go around cutting trees down willy-nilly, but taking the fees away from just minimizing the fees, especially for dead trees. I'm all in favor of the minimal changes that we're proposing tonight to give it the Planning Commission. I think residents shouldn't have to pay anything but the tree guy to cut it down or themselves some sweat equity, cut their own tree down. It should be free.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Darris.
Thank you. On the note of fees for removing a tree, I think we've already discussed this, and I think it's when somebody has a tree that's dead for nothing that they've done, it's natural causes, we'll just call it that, charging them to remove it, I think it's like rubbing salt on the wound. But what I did want to comment on was you said a little while ago that you do have the discretion to require an arborist report. And what occurred to me is that you could have a tree that everybody could agree maybe is 100 years old, like the one that died out here, and it died because it's 100 plus years old. But if you have a tree that's 30 or 40 years old and is dying from what appears to be natural causes, is it diseased or something? And I think that would be a time when an arborist would be important because you don't want other trees to be infected and have other issues coming along. So a tree that died early of natural causes, I think, is something that is, you know, is where a time would come where you'd want to see an arborist get involved. But you said you had the discretion to be able to call for that, so I'm assuming that's what you're thinking with that. But I will agree with what the mayor said and what Councilmember Peak said on excessive fees for trees to remove dead trees is, I think, is problematic. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Before we got to the public, I will make a note of correction. In the staff report indicates that, you know, we adopted this ordinance in 1998. And I know for a fact, because I was sitting right over there in Councilmember Newsom's seat, that we adopted a tree ordinance in 1988. And so 1998 represented a substantial rewrite of the ordinance, but this has been around a long time. And I recall the discussion specifically, and it was passed on a 4-1 vote, which I remember well. I'm going to open it up to the public for any comment on this item.
Jeff Oslin. I think the minor changes make perfect sense. You know, if you're in the downtown and you have a 100-year-old tree and it's obviously dead, if you don't call an arborist and you wait long enough, it's going to fall over anyways, and that becomes a safety issue. So I think those minor changes make perfect sense. I think on the broad tree ordinance, it does need to be revisited. I can tell you with the construction project I did, I thought one of the ordinances was ridiculous. I never lost a tree. I planted 40 trees when I moved on my property. I have almost 100 trees on my property, if you count them all. Some are native, some are not. Where my property lies, I don't have the option really to plant one new tree by a requirement of our building code. If you pull a permit, you have to plant one new tree. So maybe the option is, instead of it being on your property as the ordinance and it gets reviewed, maybe it is a you plant one tree or you fund one new tree to the city or something of that nature. It might make more sense. But for somebody with 100 trees, I don't have a spot for another tree. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else wishing to approach the council and speak on this item, please come forward now. Okay, seeing none, I'm going to return it back to council. I again would like to comment on, you know, I would like to see us, you know, proceed through this process, you know, put this out to the Planning Commission on these changes. I think they're minor and they're certainly warranted at this point, but I do very much wish to propose to my colleagues that we have an in-depth discussion of the tree ordinance come January. I did ask Mr. Dunsmore today how many tree removal permits we've issued in the last 5 years, and I asked him this evening in the bathroom how many of those are for single-family residences where there was construction versus commercial properties. And because we talk about single-family residences being exempt, and they are just on a day, on a everyday basis, if you don't have an active permit, you can go chop down a, a tree this big around if you have no active thing. And he indicated to me that most of the tree remover permits actually are on single-family properties because that's where most of the trees are. You know, people wanting to build new homes on lots, they have to, in many cases, cut down some trees. Although, as Mr. Councilmember Peake noted, we have far, 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 far more trees than we did 30 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, because, you know, vacant lots like mine that were agricultural, as houses are built, people plant trees. So building houses in the long run is good for tree cover. It's good for, you know, our urban forest. And yet our ordinance treats that, oh my God, somebody's building a house and they have to take out a tree like it's, you know, the end of the world. I think the whole thing needs a serious revisit, and I would like my colleagues' concurrence that we will address this, the tree ordinance, in a more significant way come January when we have a new council member. But like to see us proceed this evening, and so I'll open it up to discussion and or motions on this item tonight.
I don't believe we have to make a motion on this. This is for direction, but on your request, I would agree that I think we do need to have an in-depth discussion because I think there's a lot of things. We don't want to make it more complicated. You already said that there's too much in there, but I think it needs to be refined to modern times and have just a lot of things more clearly defined. So I would agree after January would be a good time.
Okay. Then I would like us to each address then providing staff the guidance this evening to proceed with these particular changes and run it through the Planning Commission and bring back to council. So I'm going to go ahead and start on the left, though. Finish on the left.
Yes. I'd like to provide direction on the several items that were being changed tonight to proceed to Planning Commission.
Okay. Got it. Thank you. Councilmember Funk.
Yeah, I think we're making some real common sense changes here. I've suggested a couple of fine points that we can even add some other categories of folks who have expertise to keep it simpler and inexpensive when guidance needs to be sought. I'm comfortable with the answers that staff provided on how this is going. And the discussion has been really useful behind the scenes in terms of people being surprised that we're talking about this and then coming to realize what we're doing is really targeted to, a very small subset of dead trees. And let's keep it easy. Keep the focus on planting new trees and not on punishing people for being the one who was caught holding the bag when the tree died. So that's, as far as this goes, I think we're in good shape and it can go through the process. And there will be opportunity for public input on a couple of those fine points. As to the larger discussion that the mayor was requesting, I think it's, there's usefulness. We're trying to do, people love the trees. We're trying to retain something that's really valuable, not just for individual properties, but for the community as a whole. And doing so in the context of a new general plan with different zoning codes, new state housing codes that regulate this, and a change in climate that may affect what kinds of trees will do well long term. So if we do that kind of discussion that the mayor is requesting in January, I would like us to include a specific discussion with the community and with arborists about the heritage trees, in particular, the heritage trees that are up and down East Mall and West Mall, because I'm concerned that the beautiful symmetry of what E.G. Lewis planted, that they're all the same kind of tree, could leave us vulnerable 50 or 100 years from now in the life cycle of the next round of trees, that all of those trees die at once. As Councilmember Peake was saying about the sycamores on Atascadero Avenue, and we need to think about what's the best way to balance the aesthetics of the situation and the long-term survivability of the shade that people will need after everybody on this dais is no longer here. So this is what we let's take it from a, 50, 100 year perspective, the lifetime of big trees. If we're looking at this, look at how we are achieving the urban forestry. How do we make it simpler to have for people to plant and support and sustain the trees that make our city wonderful?
Thank you. Councilmember Newsom.
Thank you. I think it's important that we maintain the policy to be simple and user-friendly. I think it's important to also make sure that it's affordable to the residents. I think public input, I think right now with the continued discussion that we have, is bringing about a lot of people concerned that we're doing away with the policy. So I just want to make sure that it's user-friendly and affordable to the residents.
Okay, thank you all. And staff, is that enough guidance for you to proceed?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you all much. We're going to proceed on, that's less on the agenda item. We are going to proceed to council announcements and committee reports. I will start on my right with Councilmember Newsom.
Thank you. SLOCOG met on Wednesday. A lot of discussion. SLOCOG board at the end ended up adopting a resolution to request the removal of Measure H from the November ballot, which would later go on to the supervisors for consideration. Determined that there wasn't enough support. Some of the citizens group that did the fundraising in the initial stages for the ballot measure were not willing to invest the time and the energy to move forward. Based on polling numbers, they just felt that there wasn't enough support to have this ballot measure pass. So it's been withdrawn.
All right, thank you. Councilmember Funk.
The meeting of the Atascadero Basin Groundwater Sustainability Agency that was scheduled for this month has been moved to September, I believe it's September 2nd. This is, working on a fairly routine reporting process with a little bit of additional data. And it was deferred at the request of our consultants. The Homeless Services Oversight Council Executive Committee will be meeting this month. I'm no longer on the executive because I've passed the torch as vice president of the committee. But exec is going to handle an issue with regard to some standards for how homeless prevention money is distributed and the extent to which geographic-based minimums are involved. And then a task force is going to look at a broader a range of how it is. Essentially, what HSOC is, the Homeless Services Oversight Council, is wrestling with is how to have performance-based funding that also ensures that people in different areas of the county and different age groups have equitable access to services, and not to have the metrics of performance get caught up in things where an organization looks like it's less successful because it doesn't serve as many people because we didn't give it as much money last time, and so they're now. And they keep, you can get an organization into a downward spiral that has nothing to do with actually getting the services delivered. So that's what, trying to wrestle that out is what HSOC is working on right now. And then one item, League of California Cities, I'm about to take over from Councilmember Newsom as the rep there. And at the September conference, there will be one item brought forward by the City of Murrieta, which is seeking a working group for a constitutional amendment related to local control over housing policy. So if the council members chose to have some discussion on that, it's pretty expansive approach to it. If council members wanted to give direction, that would have to be at the next council meeting.
I did also receive that email. I'm not sure, Mr. City Attorney, how much we could discuss that, or perhaps Mr. Lewis could address whether that resolution for the city of Marietta is in keeping with our existing legislative plan, which would enable us to, you know, enable Councilmember Funk to vote in support of it. Did you see that email?
I did not see that email. I'm sorry.
I have. I'm very familiar with the resolution. I think the resolution calls for establishment of a working group to pursue ballot initiatives that would assure local control, basically, more so over state housing law. So while your legislative platform defends the city's right to have its legislative local control, it's a little different process. I think we probably should put it on the agenda if you wanted to talk about it.
Okay. I think, but though, Councilmember Funk, as our representative, she can vote however she would like to vote on that, with or without our guidance, correct?
Yes, and as a board member for Cal Cities, I actually have a pretty strong opinion on the process for it that I could advise Councilmember Funk under advisement. I think that would recommend that.
I think that would be helpful. So, okay, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Daris.
Thank you. Last month, CAPSLO met due to my workload. I was unable to make that meeting, but they're meeting again next Thursday, and I will be at that meeting.
Okay. Councilmember Peak.
Yeah, July was a slow committee month for me, but we have City Schools Committee coming up in a week or two after the start of school year, so that'll be interesting to come up to speed with the school, a couple of school board members and the superintendent. No DRC for as far back as I can remember, as Councilwoman Funk knows. So everything is hunky-dory there. Was able to attend a few ribbon cuttings this past month, and it seems the summer has been pretty ripe for new chamber members and some businesses opening in town. And was nice to see the Morrow Road Liquor was finally opened after what seemed like 6-7 years of construction. So very nice store, nice deli in there. Just looking forward to the rest of the summer. And I don't have kids, so it's summer for another 2 more months.
All right. Thank you. And none of my committees met in July, and so I have nothing to report on that. I also attended the opening Morrow Road Liquor there, and that was interesting. But I would also note on that particular project, you know, you have the liquor store down below with a deli, et cetera, but you also have some residences on top, and it's a classic example of the kind of mixed-use project that the city has allowed and promotes. So you get a couple of additional housing units, you know, which provides housing opportunities for people. So, and I forgot to mention that in my remarks at the ribbon cutting, but we appreciate that happening. And we had a ribbon cutting down here on the steps of City Hall, which was important for a non-bricks and mortar business. So, but we always appreciate businesses opening in our community and want to support them as much as possible. And I would note, as the city manager mentioned, this is our only meeting in August, so we will not be back here until I think it's September 8th, so or something. So anyway, so you might miss us. So in any case, I'm going to see if there's any. And this is our only meeting in August, so we will not be back here until I think it's September 8th, so or something. So anyway, so you might miss us. So in any case, I'm going to see if there's any.
At this time, we conclude tonight's broadcast of the Atascadero City Council meeting. And we invite you to join the City of Atascadero for their council meetings the second and fourth Tuesday of each month. We now join our regularly scheduled program in progress. You're listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, Paso Robles, Atascadero, and Templeton.
encryption, VPN, cloud backup, and more, helping you keep your digital life secure throughout the school year and beyond. As the school year ramps up, so does time spent online. So I want you to make sure that you're protected. Go to webroot.com/Lars, that's L-A-R-S, and get 60% off today. That's webroot, one word, webroot.com/Lars. You'll get 60% off the regular price today. Live a better digital life with Webroot, because peace of mind should not be optional. It certainly isn't for me. It isn't for my family. It shouldn't be for you and your family. Go to webroot.com/Lars and save 60% today.
Hey, Jeff, looks like your business is really booming, even in a tough time for businesses like ours.
Hey, Mike. Yeah, thanks to LendSeek, our business was able to take care of some outstanding bills and taxes and to purchase inventory and expand our product lines.
Wow. You know, my business needs working capital, but only from a reputable company that I can trust and count on. How does LendSeek work?
Fast and easy. Just apply at LendSeek.com. Their AI lending platform gave my business access to over 100 funding programs with one simple application. And it costs nothing to apply.
At LendSeek.com, you can receive business funding with no collateral, no prepayment penalties, and no restrictions on how you use the funds. Whatever your funding needs are, seek no more. Our AI lending marketplace has you covered. If you've been in business at least 1 year with annual revenue of at least $250,000, you can get the funding your business needs in as little as 24 hours. There's no obligation, so apply today at LendSeek.com. That's LendSeek.com.
Spring Street Mobile offers a full synthetic Mobil 1 oil change. It helps keep your car safe, reliable, and long-lived. Every service includes our signature service for no worries driving. We want you to leave here ready for the long haul. Every full service includes checking your lights, wipers, tires, fluids, belts, hoses, and horn. Come on down to Spring Street Mobile and experience good old-fashioned customer service.
Hi, this is Marianne Tardif, and I'm just like you, concerned about the dangers of using the internet. Are you thinking about online estate planning? It seems easy. Just fill out some forms, click submit, and you're done. But here's what those websites don't tell you. If your documents aren't done correctly, there's no recourse and no one to help you fix it. And all your personal and financial information is exposed. An online legal assistant doesn't know you, your family, or your unique situation. They're not there to follow up, and they certainly won't be around when your family needs help the most. It's a one-and-done transaction, leaving your loved ones to deal with the fallout if anything goes wrong. I'm Marianne Tardif. Give me a call at 805-451-6683 or matesq@me.com.
Protect your home or business. Trust the experts at JV Roofing. With over 20 years of experience, JV Roofing delivers reliable, high-quality workmanship you can count on. From shingle, tile, and metal roofs to TPO and PVC systems, they have the expertise to handle it all. Family-owned, licensed, and bonded, they show up and get the job done right. Visit jvroofingca.com or call 805-674-1383 today for free estimates. JV Roofing, quality you can trust.
The Red Scooter Deli with two locations, downtown and on 6th Street in Paso Robles. The downtown location on Pine Street is open 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Thursdays now for concerts in the park. Plan your musical enjoyment with a to-go dinner from the downtown Red Scooter Deli. Red Scooter Deli has beer, wine, and mimosas. Ask for the 15% off KPRL discount. Great deli fresh food delivered throughout Paso Robles, Templeton, the airport area, and wineries. Go to redscooterdeli.com.
This hour of Lars Larson brought to you by Seniors Helping Seniors. Call 805-369-2110 or at seniorcareslo.com.
That's 866-HEY-LARS. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. I want to go first to Mississippi, listening on the Super Talk Network, and Fred is on the line. Fred, thanks so much for listening. What's on your mind?
the deal with AOC and the mayor of New York and all the rest of communist people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Shouldn't they be charged with treason?
Well, to charge them with treason, you'd have to show that they had attempted to overthrow the government of the United States. Is that what they've done?
Well, it seemed like to me that's what they're doing to me.
Well, but if they're doing it through the mechanism of trying to get Democrat socialists elected to the U.S. Congress, that's the system that we have. You can't accuse them of treason if you say you're trying to run candidates and get the greatest number of votes, or can you?
I think you can.
You can.
I think the whole action that they're creating now is treasonous.
Well, no, but what part of it is treasonous? If they're running candidates for office and some of those candidates mm-hmm. attract the greatest number of votes, what part of that is treasonous?
Well, I can understand what you're saying
I'm sure, Fred, that there are people on the left who look at Donald Trump and they say, Donald Trump's evil. And we don't want him as president. I understand that. But he won the election.
Uh-huh.
So he's entitled to be president. And those on the right would look at people like AOC and Mamdani and say, these people do not have the best interests of my country at heart. And yet, you know, if they run and they get the greatest number of votes, then they get the office, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do we do about that other than beat them at the polls? Fred?
Oh, yeah, you got me on that one. Yes,
well,
I understand, because
you know, in some ways, Fred, I think the Democrat Party is setting itself up right now because they are appearing to be so crazy. I mean, the socialist stuff they're talking about, get rid of the cops, get rid of the prisons, get rid of don't lock criminals up anymore, all of those things and more. I mean, there's a long, long list of the things that I've cited a number of times that the DSA stands for. And if that's what the Democrats want to stand for, do you think a majority of Americans will vote for those policies?
Well, it don't take the majority because the way things are going now, especially with the deal with Iraq, people are not going to vote the Republican anymore.
You mean with Iran?
Yeah, Iran.
Well, one of the things we need to do with Iran, and I don't think Donald Trump has done the best job of this, Fred, I'd be honest with you, even though I'm a Donald Trump supporter, he needs to sell the idea to the American public, Iran was a problem that had to be addressed right now. And I've asked people, think about this for a moment, Fred. All of us have things that we don't want to do, but they may need to be done. I'll give you the example that, you know, maybe you want to clean all the gutters on the outside of your house. And you say, but I'm really not looking forward to getting up on that tall ladder and getting up and cleaning all the stuff. And that's a small chore. But, you know, there are chores that all of us look at and say, oh, boy, I'm not looking forward to doing that. Right. But there are things that you realize at some point you have to do before, you know, certain other things happen. For example, I've got a giant pile of firewood that is sectioned up into rounds, but it hasn't been split up so that it can finish drying. I need to get that done by the end of August because I don't want to be splitting wood and trying to get it dry after the rains start this fall. So it's a chore that I need to get to. Do you think that Donald Trump said, hey, why don't we start a real war with Iran right now in the middle of an election year? Do you think that was his choice?
No.
Because he realizes...
I agree with the war.
Yeah, I agree with the war, too. I think they had to deal with Iran. And what's funny is mm-hmm. Obama, Biden, Clinton, I mean, almost every American president of Democrat or Republican label has said we cannot let Iran have nuclear weapons, except not one of them was willing to do what Donald Trump did. And that actually means go in and say, we're not going to let you have nuclear weapons. Obama was happy to just say, well, I've got a piece of paper in which the mad mullahs of Tehran have promised not to get nuclear weapons. That piece of paper probably wasn't worth even using as toilet paper. It was a worthless agreement. But Obama thought, I've done enough. It'll look like I've done something. In the case of Trump, he wasn't happy to simply say, I'm going to make it look like I've done something. He had to actually make it happen. So he's safeguarding the whole world. And I know there are Democrats and liberals who want, you know, they don't want us to take away nuclear weapons from the folks in Iran. And yet if Donald Trump didn't do it, who's going to be available to make it happen?
No one.
No, and that's what we have. Go ahead.
And also on that subject, I don't agree with the pause and the bumming. I think they should have kept on bumming and never stopped until they come to and begging us. I don't think we should stop.
I think he's trying to do it. I think he's trying to apply pressure in a way that brings the country around and tells them you can't have nuclear weapons. We're not going to let you threaten the world. We're not going to let you close down the Strait of Hormuz. But if he does it in such a way that he does not destroy the infrastructure of Iran, if he does, then that country ends up being a poor country for a long, long time. Would you like the folks who take the place of the IRGC and the crazy mullahs that are running Iran now, would you like them to have the resources to be able to make that country run well? Because I don't think poverty usually leads people to do crazy things as well. So making a poverty-stricken Iran is not good for world peace either, is it?
No, it's not really.
Yeah.
But the pauses, I don't agree with all the pauses. I think we should just do what we got to do. They got all the infrastructure as far as power and as far as their weapons and as far as their military. Just take them all out. Just don't stop until you get them all.
Okay. And that's one approach. That's not the approach that Donald Trump is taking. But he seems to think he knows what he's doing. And I believe he probably does know what he's doing. I think Donald Trump is going to try to make sure that Iran is capable of going on as a country, just not as a nuclear armed country. By the way, I mentioned Lindsey Clancy. Consider the former husband of a Massachusetts mother accused of strangling the couple's three young children in 2023. Took the stand at her trial yesterday as the first witness. Patrick Clancy, who's since remarried, testified that Lindsey Clancy experienced mental health issues after the births of their children. He indicated that at one point she was suicidal and had thoughts of harming their kids. Lindsey Clancy, a former nurse, has pleaded not guilty to three murder charges in connection with the deaths of her five-year-old daughter, Cora, three-year-old son, Dawson, and infant son, Callan, on January 24, 3 years ago. In opening statements on Monday, yesterday, Lindsey Clancy's defense attorney said she was suffering from psychosis at the time of her children's death. This is a woman that did not get the medication, did not get the medical treatment that she deserves. So, her own attorney is saying it's not her fault. It's medicine's fault that she didn't get the kind of treatment that would have kept her sane enough not to go out and kill her kids. I think we know where that one's going to go. Back in a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.
Brought to you by Central Coast Tractor Work. Brush removal, grading, excavation, and more. No job is too small, and they work weekends. Some clouds tonight and overnight, lows in the mid-50s. Clouds and sunshine, low 80s on Wednesday, upper 70s Thursday. Weather was brought to you by Central Coast Tractor Work, 805-440-6361.
Is this a sign you need a sign? The Blue Printer and Graphics in downtown Paso Robles can help your business be seen. In addition to flyers, business cards, invitations, wine club signups, and blueprints, the Blue Printer and Graphics offers vinyl banners, PVC, coroplast, and metal signs, as well as full-color posters. Check out their new website at pasoblue.com. That's pasoblue.com. And be seen with the Blue Printer and Graphics in downtown Paso Robles.
Do you use propane for your home or business? Family-owned and operated, Delta Liquid Energy has provided local area residents with dependable and courteous propane service since 19... 19-